Jimmy Breslin, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and novelist, has spent his entire career chronicling New York City stories and sagas. In his latest book, The Good Rat, A True Story, he gives us a view of the people and places that define the mafia. And woven throughout is the testimony of Bert Kaplan, the star witness in the recent trial of the two New York detectives indicted for working as mob hitmen. The book is published by Echo, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Jimmy Breslin back to this show now. Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
What makes a good rat?
Well, because he is on our side when he was ratting it. That's what they figure. I like the title.
I mean, the cops call the guys who in the mob who rat,
a rat
good rats?
But this guy's a good rat. What? I got a call from a publisher, an agent, so they wanted me to do a book on these two cops, Eppolito and Caracappa. They were associated with the mafia, woven with them, killing for them, setting up murders. It was a great New York mob story. And I met them out in the lobby of the courtroom the day the trial started, and we talked, and then I walked away, and I hated them. And I sat down in the court, and I'm not going to spend 6 months of my life or more write 70,000 words about these two. Forget about it. So I'm going to call at lunch. I'm going to call the publisher and tell him forget it. At which point the door opens and the first prosecution witness walks in. Your name? Burton Kaplan. Well, I sit up now. I thought he'd be the mafia accountant. Then he had glasses, suit and tie, gray suit, hair, receding hairline. He looked like an accountant or somebody from the garment center. So then they said, your address? Well, I'm presently incarcerated in the prison in Pennsylvania. What the hell was the name of
it? Is that no, it's Kansas. I don't know. Well,
he's next door to
Lewisburg?
Next door to Lewisburg, the farm place. So then they said, have you committed any crimes? What crimes have you committed? Oh, yes, I have. What were they? Murder, mayhem, assault, manslaughter, stolen interstates of stolen goods, everything. Everything. Stolen Peruvian passports. With that, I was electrified. Everything but killing babies. So they said, have you committed any crimes when you're in jail? He said, yes, I did. Allenwood is the place he was. Yes, I did. I was in Allenwood, and I was assaulted. And I had a friend of mine send me $1,000, and I gave it to a Mexican, and he assaulted the guy back, assaulted him pretty good, too. And then he looked out at the audience, and he said, that's what prisoners like, you know. And I says, look at this. One word went through my mind watching him, Dostoevsky. That's all. Big. So at lunchtime, we went across the street, and I had a cup of coffee, and Bettina Schein was a wonderful woman, works with Bruce Cutler on the defense of that case was the defense of Eppolito. She came over to me at lunch in the diner and said, what do you think of the witness? And before I could say Dostoevsky, she said Raskolnikov. and that's just what he was. And he went through the rest of the trial that way. The word, are you a member of the mafia? No, I can't be. I'm Jewish. When they start talking like that, what shot have I got?
And yet he
was the best witness ever.
He seemed to be one of the last true believers of the Mafia's Code of America.
There's a Jewish guy who did some finagling for his daughter's wedding so it would be in the Rich Temple in Woodmere or someplace. He was a Jew almost. I thought he was an observant Jew, except for the dead bodies. And
I talked about Omerta.
Omerta, and he, out of his, I went into the Jewish stuff so much, he had such a deep belief in the Omerta, in the mafia code that came out of Sicily, he winds up the last believer in the whole city. Everybody else rats out, squeals, goes to prison. He stood there, I won't talk, and he's in jail for 18 years. Feldman from the United States Attorney's Office went over to see him at the end to see if in a prison in West Virginia to get him to talk. They figured he was giving some idea he might. And he walked in and said, now, what is this all about? And Kaplan said, I can do my time. So,
but he did wind up talking. And he winds up being as a brilliant storyteller.
Oh, yes.
Was this a natural thing, do you think?
The judge, Jack B. Weinstein, who's a tower in this city, said at the end of the trial, when all was done, he said he has the most fantastic memory of anybody I've ever seen.
Now, Jack Weinstein grew up in Bensonhurst,
yes.
So he kind of had a little bit of an insight.
He's the best. That. Jack Weinstein's a huge name in justice.
Now, why do you think turning informant has become so common to the point where someone like Big Joey Massino, the boss of the Bananos, the family that prided itself in never having a snitch, has turned on his own mob family?
But at one time, if you're in the mafia, you got caught, you got 5 years. And you got to be able to do 5 years or don't be in. Now, all of a sudden, it changes. They get 55 years. They get 100 years. They're getting all kinds of... Victorino from the gangster, he was in court, and he got from Judge Weinstein 2 lifetimes plus 80 years. So he said to the clerk, which one am I doing first? So the guy says, whatever you want. He says, put me down for doing the 80 first. Then I'll start on the 2 lifetimes. His lawyer put in an appeal, a fancy appeal, and he came up, was brought up from Atlanta prison, Victorino, for his biggest day in court. He assured his girlfriend that I've got them cornered now. We're going to get what we want. He sits on a school bus from Atlanta. They put you on a bus handcuff. It goes to Kansas City first, then here, then finally to the court in Brooklyn. He walks in prison suit, blue prison suit, sits down. The judge comes in, Weinstein, he looks, he says, what's he doing here? So his lawyer gets up and says, for the appeal, the motion. Weinstein says, motion denied. Marshal, take him back to prison. And they walk him out after a minute and 10 second appearance in court, back to the school bus, out to Kansas City, down here, Evansville, Indiana, finally to Atlanta to his cell, where he still resides.
Now, it's actually the RICO that changed everything,
yes.
the racketeering law. But
RICO was put together. You know, you've got to know your enemy, and sometimes he's on your side. RICO was put together by a little guy from the Notre Dame Law School. What's his name? Whatever. University of Notre Dame Law School. And he put it together, and it's an enemy of the people. It really is.
You don't like it?
No.
You seem to have a bit of nostalgia for the good old days in
an
odd way.
Well, you always do, I guess, as the calendar takes care of you. But this is cruelty, and I don't like it.
You think that this is abuse of the law?
Yes, absolutely. This is trying to show that you're tough because you've got a certificate, a lecture certificate, or somebody appointed you to be a United States attorney or in the Justice Department, and you're going to get even with what, I don't know, but they do.
Well, you used to get a lot of the stories that the law couldn't get. Do you think that's still happening? Are there any reporters out there who
Nobody reports. Everybody, it's all different. The electronics has changed it totally.
So we rely on Matt Drudge to tell us who the latest mob boss is.
I don't read any of that. I don't read anything. I'll go out and listen to somebody in the street or somebody will call me up. I don't go with any of the computer. People sit at computers and think they're doing their work. The work is to go out with your feet.
Now, Joe Massino, who turned against the Bananos, was called the last of the old bosses. Do you think that there won't be any more big bosses like there were in the old days?
There's got to be something. Look, as long as indolence thrives, there'll always be crime like this. What other world can you be in that you don't like grammar school, so you try to get out? Maybe if you're unlucky, they make you somebody in the family makes you start high school, which you don't finish. Now you could get paid, sleep half the day, get up and get paid, have jewelry, cars, money, and women without working.
So,
what other field gives you that opportunity, except crime.
But it won't be the mafia anymore. Maybe it will be. The government officials are talking about the case that came along after you handed in your book, I suspect, the new Gambino case, as the end of the mafia.
How can it be the end if, I say it's the end as you know it, as we write about it. But how can it, it's not going to end crime because of what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Greed and laziness, you put the two together, you got a criminal.
You actually had, first of all, I should tell people that I'm talking with Jimmy Breslin, in case you don't recognize his very recognizable voice. His latest book is called The Good Rat, A True Story. It is published by Echo. What was the mafia's heyday, as far as you were concerned? Was it before your time, or?
Oh yeah, it had to be in the 30s
during Prohibition.
Prohibition, 30s.
But you gained access. You knew people like the Genovese family boss,
them.
Fat Tony Salerno.
Was the Tip O'Neill of the underworld. Everybody knew him, Fat Tony.
He was one of these guys who was willing to
He also knew exactly what to say. I mean, he didn't. Nobody got in trouble. No mobster got in trouble because of him. He knew what to say.
Because some of the other mobsters who became famous, like Joe Colombo and then John Gotti, the other mobsters didn't like them because they were just too much in the news.
Well, John Gotti liked the news a lot. I mean, he would walk into the Bergen Hut and Fish Club on 101st Avenue, which was his headquarters. I'm familiar with it because I was born on 101st Avenue in Richmond Hill, Ozone Park. So he would walk in.
I grew up
in.
There, too, for a while.
What? You did?
My first 5 years, yeah.
Where?
I think it was 103rd. I can't remember. It was too long ago. But we had a candy store near an old A&P.
On 101st Avenue?
I think it was 101st. There was a church on the next block.
Yeah.
That's all I remember. We left when I was 5 years old.
Down, yeah. But he would walk in there sitting at the table playing cards. He would walk in and look, the papers would be spread out. And he'd say, am I in there? No, we looked. Your name isn't in there and your picture isn't in there. The rest of the day, you couldn't live with him. He wanted to be in the paper.
And why? He was rolling in dough. He was a giant success. He got all the respect you could ever want. I used to watch him walk down Mulberry Street, and everybody would bow. Hi, John.
The insides glow when your picture is in the paper. Marvelous. Thrilling.
One of the prominent mobsters from the Mafia Cop case was Anthony Gaspipe Casso.
Yeah.
How did he get the name Gaspipe?
I guess he hit people over the head with gas pipes. They claim his father worked for the gas company. He was in with Kaplan. Those two were together.
And he escaped a hit from John Gotti.
Yep.
So I guess the mob isn't as effective as it used to be in the old
days. I don't know how effective or ineffective. There certainly were a lot of dead bodies, and there are a lot of people in jail. That's all I know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Now, the cops that you decided you didn't want to write about.
Yeah.
That case is still up in the air, isn't it?
No, but legal technicalities, as they call them, on the RICO charges they're not involved in one long sentence or another, but rest assured, you're just like, they're in for life. They're never going to get out. They got charges on them that they're guilty of, and they're not going anyplace.
And Gaspipe Casso is now in Florence Supermax prison.
Gone.
He's there serving alongside the 1993 World Trade Center attackers.
Yep, they're there.
What are some of the bars and hangouts you write about in this book? Why was Pep McGuire's the greatest bar in the history of the city, you say?
Because I went in it. That's why. But it had everything. It had a band, a live band, that wound up doing very well and went to Vegas. They moved them out. They did terrific. They had more gangsters and judges per square foot than any bar in the world.
And the judges weren't concerned that they were in a
bar
where there were gangsters?
No, nobody cared about anything. Then you had Con Errico, the jockey, brought a racehorse up from Aqueduct. The horse had lost. Everybody had bet. They brought him up Queens Boulevard, and he walked, brought him right into the bar, and in one of those buckets that you put wine bottles in, they gave him water, and he's lapping up water at the bar. Then they put him on the dance floor, Errico in jockey silks, and everybody wanted to kill Errico, not the horse. The horse had lost, but it was Errico that was, they figured the rider was the rat, and they wanted to strangle him. And that was the place. It was great.
Sounds like the beginning of a joke. A horse walks into a bar.
Yep, but he did.
Why the long face?
He did. Well, he had phone calls. They owned horses. John McGuire and Norton Pepys, that owned the saloon, owned a couple of horses, one of which was Assignation. And he ran a Thistle Downs, and the trainer, Lars Pereira, called up the afternoon call the bar with the result the horse was running. He said the horse dropped dead at the last turn, so you got to send me 500. They said, what are you talking about? We'll have to bet him again next time. He said, no, you don't understand. He dropped dead. And I need 500 to remove him from the racetrack. Yep, the horse actually did drop dead.
Are there any mob hangouts anymore?
I don't know. I'm telling you,
you don't get invited to those places
anymore?
There's
no place to invite. I don't know who goes where. And it's like Tony Cafe was the nominal head of the banana mob on the Larimer and Metropolitan Larimer. That's what I wrote about. He's away. I asked him, where's the genre everybody goes? He says, there isn't any.
Well, they're all going to prison.
What the hell could you do? Everybody's in the can, sure.
Well, do you have any access to any of the mobsters who are still out?
Yeah. I mean, office boys. There's nobody big out. If I want to go to the jailhouse, I could talk to people. But that's some lousy place, the federal detention on 3rd Avenue of Brooklyn. Ugh.
Do you at all miss the old days when you were writing for the newspapers?
No. You never miss anything. Today and tomorrow is the game. I mean, I'm immensely proud of this book, and I think it's going to do very well. The reviews are spectacular. Let's go on. You know, whatever's past is past.
It's a lot of fun, and all true, unfortunately or fortunately.
What, this book?
Too many people died, yeah. I think.
Well, I can't stop that. They went in. I'm not a preventive medicine.
Are you working on another book?
Yes, I am. I'm working on a book which turned into be fascinating. When I promise something, that means I mean no, but I promised a book on Branch Rickey for the Great American series that Viking Press has. So I start doing it. I'm laboring. Now comes this Obama campaign. I'm looking at how Rickey got Jackie Robinson into baseball and changed the country as he was doing it. And I'm looking at the Obama thing, and I say, look at this. The foundation is here on my desk that I'm writing about. I mean, Rickey started in Forest Hills on Greenway North one cold morning, went into downtown Brooklyn to start putting a black into baseball. That was his burning religious wish.
And it changed this country.
It did, and it put Obama on your ballot today.
Jamie Breslin won the 1986 Pulitzer Prize for Distinguished Commentary. He's written any number of bestsellers, and the latest is probably going to be a bestseller as well, The Good Rat, A True Story, published by Echo.
Yep.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me. I'll come again in 10 years.